We are at the very beginning of a new semester, and for some, it may be your first time on campus, and I'd like to use this opportunity, really, as I mentioned, to frame what I think can be a conversation we can collectively think about. It's a very exciting stage of your lives. These are very formidable years, and you have so much to look forward to, so many dreams and so many aspirations and so many great visions of what you want to do as you continue to move on the journey of life. And as we spoke in the last class, everybody has a very different kind of journey and everyone has a very different kind of goal. And all of them are ambitious and are noble and wonderful. But you've chosen to spend these years here in Stern College. And you had, I'm sure many of you have had opportunities to go somewhere else. So by coming here, I would venture to say it probably means that you believe that aside from all of the ambitions that you have for different aspects of your professional life, you also have spiritual ambitions that are important to you as well. And that's what I thought was important to talk about today, that it's essential that we all live lives of ambition in our ruchnius, that we all think big, that we all have opportunities to consider what it is that life puts in front of us. And that's really what I'd like to discuss today. And the launch point from where we're going to go is the story of Hillel HaZaken. So normally this is a halacha class, and Amir Tzashem, next week we'll pick up on that. But I always feel, in the beginning, I know last semester I gave a few Hakdama Shiurim, I'm going to try not to do that again, I couldn't help myself. But I think it's important every so often just to understand why it is that we do what we do, why it's important that we do what we do. I would have given the same Shiurim again this semester, but I have some returning students, so I didn't think it was fair to you. But let's look at the story of Hillel HaZaken. Hillel HaZaken, you may be familiar, there's a lot of discussion in the Gemara about Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were the students of Shammai and the students of Hillel. But the original Hillel was referred to as Hillel HaZaken, Hillel the Elder. So Hillel says, very famously in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, Hu Haya Omer, he used to say, Im ein ani li mili, uchshe ani la atzmi ma ani, v'im la achsha v'im asai. So the Mishnah says, Im ein ani li mili, if I'm not for myself, then who is for me? V'im la achsha v'im asai, and if not now, then when? So that's what I'd like to focus on. But before getting into the specifics of this Mishnah, what I'd like to do is really focus on the author of the Mishnah, on Hillel himself, and on his life and legacy, because he is such an important personality, such a staple of our tradition, of our Mesorah, of all of Torah Shebaal Peh. And his life, to me, was so deeply inspiring in so many different ways. And it also helps us to gain a better appreciation of what he says in this Mishnah. Im ein ani li mili, uchshe ani l'matzmi ma'ani, v'im l'achshav, em asai. So first of all, the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was one of the great Gedolim in the last generation, lived in Bnei Brak. Chazon Ish writes the following. What is the reason why we're telling stories? Very often you'll read a Gemara, you'll be in a class, and they'll tell a story about a great tzaddik, about a great leader, about a great person. What's the reason? What's the point? Are we all Pesach Pro? First of all, he's a much better storyteller than I am. But why do we tell stories? What's the reason to tell stories? Says the Chazon Ish, Roy l'machzikim v'toras Hashem, it is a valuable pursuit for those who are upholding the Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ladas es gedoleha ba'ofim ha'amiti, to become acquainted with the leaders, with the people who we look up to, with the people who we aspire to be. Ki ha'yedio shal chachmei hador, because having an understanding of who the leaders of the generation were, libam u'midasam, understanding not only their words, but also their heart, and midasam means their character traits, says the Chazon Ish, hein hein gufei ha'torah, that itself can serve as the soul, as the essence of Torah. So don't think, just because we're not studying Hilchos Shabbos and just because we're not looking at the Parsha and we're not doing this or that, don't think that this is a waste of time, says the Chazon Ish. Hein hein gufei ha'Torah, having an opportunity to acquaint ourselves with some of the great leaders of the Jewish people over the millennia is what he considers to be hein hein gufei ha'Torah. Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the great Rishonim who lived in Spain in the 13th century. He was actually from the family of the Ramban. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the Sefer Shari Tshuva, which is a very important Sefer. He says as follows, Yadua Hadavar, it is well known.
כי מן המידות הנועות לספר בשבח החכמים והצדיקים, כמו שנאמר בחתור כבודם שבות.
Rabbeinu Yonah writes that it's well known that to look into the stories and to study them and understand what we can take away from those stories is something that is of value to us. And Rav Kook so beautifully writes, as you'll see in the next paragraph, we're not going to read it, but Rav Kook always expresses himself very, very poetically. And here he writes, what is the reason? What is the goal? What's the aspiration? Are we just storytellers? Is that the only reason to tell a story? Or to study a story in Chazal? And the reason he gives us is because, obviously, when you read a story, you become a little bit more familiar with the glory and the majesty of the life that was lived. But beyond that, Rav Kook writes, we aspire to greatness when we talk about greatness. When we see somebody who maybe I cannot envision my life being exactly in sync with their life, but at least some portion of it is relevant to me. There's something that I can take for myself. There's an aspiration that I can have. There's a goal that I can set. There's something that I can do that will make me think perhaps a little bit differently than I did before. And that, says Rav Kook, is the reason why we focus on stories. So let's find out who Hillel actually was, and let's learn about his unique character traits and how they are relevant to all of us here as well. Hillel was a personality who grew up in Babel. Hillel was one of the great Tanaim. Hillel grew up in Babel. There were two different communities at the time. There was a community in Eretz Yisrael, and there was a parallel community in Babel, in Chutz Laaretz, in Babylonia. When he was 40 years old, the Gemara tells us, he went up to Eretz Yisrael. What brought him to Eretz Yisrael? He came to Eretz Yisrael because he knew that there were two great Talmid Chachamim, two great sages who were alive at the time, Shmaya v'Avtalion. Their names are not so important for us to remember, but Shmaya v'Avtalion were the two great leaders at the time. And Hillel said, I'm robbing myself of the opportunity to learn from them because I'm staying here where I live. If I move to Eretz Yisrael, if I go to Israel, I'll have the opportunity to learn from them and to gain knowledge from them. And that is what he did. So first of all, picks himself up at 40 years old just to gain more knowledge. I think that's a very important lesson in and of itself. At 40 years old, for a person to remember, as successful as I am, as well as I'm doing, I always have the opportunity to challenge myself, to learn more, to look into something more deeply, to consider a situation differently, to imagine what it would look like if I moved to Eretz Yisrael at this point in my life, to reestablish my identity, to do something different that I never imagined doing, is something that was of great value to Hillel. Hillel comes to Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara says he learns Torah in abject poverty. The Gemara tells a story, became a very famous bedtime story for children, that one time Hillel was sleeping on the roof. He had no money to get into the yeshiva. He couldn't pay the tuition. He was sleeping on the roof, and the snow was covering him over, and people noticed him on the roof. It just gives us a sense of how much he was willing to invest in his own scholarship, how much he was willing to invest to build himself. And the Gemara tells us that when he was 80 years old, he came back to Eretz Yisrael. He had come, then he went back to Babel. At 80, he came back to Eretz Yisrael, and it just so happened, the Gemara says, M'sachim, that there was a time, there was a major shaila about Erev Pesach, Shechalios B'Shabbos. Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos, and nobody knew what to do about the Karban Pesach. Complicated issue. And the Gemara says they were asking everybody, does anyone know what is the halacha? What are we supposed to do? The Gemara says, finally, all eyes on Hillel HaZaken. And he said, you know, many years ago, I had the opportunity to learn by Shmaya V'Avtalio, and we actually discussed this very question. So let me tell you what they said. And everybody realized at that point how supreme the leadership of Hillel HaZaken actually was, and they made him the Nasi Yisrael. They made him the leader of the Jewish people as a result of that story. Everyone else stepped aside, and he became the leader of the Jewish people. So much so that the Gemara says in Masechta Sukkah Daf Chav, he was such an effective, such a powerful leader, that there were different generations where there was an ebb and flow of Torah study. It wasn't always so steady. It didn't always go so well. But the Gemara says, Chazra Medishtakha, when the Jewish people forgot the Torah that they had studied for so many generations, Allah Hillel Abamli V'yasta. Hillel came along and he resurrected. He reinstated Torah study across the Jewish community. So he was extremely successful. There's a fascinating medrash. If you look here on the page, the Sifri writes in Parshas Mezosa Bracha. The Torah there is describing the legendary life of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Psukim tell us, Ben Be'e Ve'esrim Shana Anochi Hayom.
Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm 120 years old today. And the Gemara then tells us, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do on his last day? A whole discussion. But the Medrash here says that although we know, lo kam b'Yisrael k'moshe od, although we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was in a league of his own, that being the case, Moshe Rabbeinu did have certain parallels to other great leaders in Jewish history as well. So although he was able to excel in so many different areas of his life, which made him the perfect, complete, composite whole, but there were other great Jewish leaders who in some way resembled the great life and legacy of Moshe Rabbeinu as well. Who were those? Says the Medrash as follows. Moshe ben Me'a ve'esrim shana, ze'afa me'arba shamesu ben Me'a ve'esrim. Moshe Rabbeinu was one of four personalities who died at the old age of 120 years old. Be'eluhem. Who were the others? Moshe, Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who also became a household name in the days of the Tanoim, and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva also, a tremendous towering figure, a great giant. Says the Medrash, Moshe Hayim Mitzrayim Amshana. What is the parallel? It's not just that Moshe Rabbeinu lived 120 years, and these other personalities did as well. Moshe Rabbeinu lived the first 40 years of his life in Egypt. At 40 years old, he went to Midian. At 80 years old, he was chosen to be the leader of the Jewish people. From 80 until 120, he was traveling with them, he was doing the makos, he was with them in the desert. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership was at its height. And the same, says the Medrash, happened in the days of Hillel HaZaken. Hillel, when he was younger, lived in Bavel. At 40 years old, he chose to move to Eretz Yisrael to learn by Shmaya Avtalio. After he was there, he went back to Bavel. At 80 years old, he then took the mantle of leadership and led the Jewish people from 80 to 120. Now this in and of itself, I think, is the first lesson that we take from the legendary life of Hillel HaZaken. A person has an opportunity to grow, to take new challenges upon themselves at every stage of life. And no one ever has a right to say, I'm too old to reconsider, I'm too old to refocus, I don't have the ability to restructure an aspect of my life, I don't have the ability to reevaluate something that I've been doing for so many years. This is the way we do it. Look at the life of Hillel. And that is what Hillel says in this Mishnah. In Loach Shavei Masai. That means that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the opportunity to experience this moment in your life, it means that He wants you to do something with it. It means He believes in you. It means He believes there's something you can accomplish. And that is such an important lesson that Hillel HaZaken teaches us. Any of you have an 80-year-old relative who had to move to another location at that age or older? It's not so easy. You have a grandparent who moves to Florida or moves to Israel, who goes to another place, who has to move next to the kids, and they have to pack up a whole life, and they have to now learn about a new society and a new surrounding and make new friends and go to the new shul and figure everything out, the supermarkets, the shopping. Everything's new to them. It's not easy, but it's what they need to do. And Hillel teaches us at every stage of life and in every aspect of life, we all have the ability to do the same, to challenge ourselves. Look at what Moshe Rabbeinu accomplished. That only started at the age of 80. Moshe Rabbeinu's legendary leadership started at the age of 80. Aaron HaKohen, his brother, was 83. These are people who are already past retirement, and yet they took on a whole new career. And that was the highlight of their career. That was the greatest investment of their time to the history of the Jewish people. And that is something that Hillel teaches us. If you think about another icon of Jewish history, as we just mentioned, it was none other than Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was one of the greatest of the Tanaim. And Rabbi Akiva is so much the foundation and the bedrock of Torah Shebaal Peh as we know it. He established Torah Shebaal Peh. And yet Rabbi Akiva, as we know, began to learn Torah at the age of 40. Can you imagine? Rabbi Akiva lowered himself. Rabbi Akiva was not ashamed. He had a thirst for knowledge. Rabbi Akiva wanted to grow. At the age of 40, he could have said, you know what, this is not for me. It's never going to happen. And yet Rabbi Akiva put himself together and understood that he needs to do whatever has to be done to make himself be a person who's going to accomplish. And it doesn't matter what age he's at. And it doesn't matter where he's up to in life. So much so, the Medrash says, Avraham Avinu was instructed to do the Bris Milah at what age? 99 years old. Perhaps to teach all of us. even if you're 99 years old, it's never too late to have a complete transformation in our lives and to revolutionize the kind of life that we may have been living to now reimagine how we want life to be lived moving forward. And that, I think, is the first lesson that we take away from the life of Hillel HaZaken. You're all, as we mentioned, in a very exciting time in your lives, the formidable years and stages of your lives. Many of you are not yet settled in a community. Many of you are not yet married. Many of you don't yet have your own children. And there's so much ahead of you to look forward to. This is a very exciting time in your life. But life, even after you do get settled, needs to always be one where there's going to be a growth-oriented mindset. That's what we're here for. That's what all of us aspire to a life of. And at every stage, at every age, at every phase of the opportunities that life will put in front of you, you're going to be filled with those chances to grow and develop and improve and progress in your own scholarship, in your own understanding, in your own commitment, and in your spiritual pursuits. That's what we're here for. If you didn't want to further your spiritual pursuits, you would have gone somewhere else. But the reason you're here is because this is important to you. Because seminary is behind you, and high school is behind you, but there's more to learn, and there's more to grow, and as we mature, we understand that at every stage of life, we all have the opportunity to do that. And that is what Hillel HaZaken teaches us. Which now brings us to the second point that is important to take away from the life of Hillel HaZaken. And in order to introduce this point properly, we'll turn our attention to the words of the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam, in describing the process of Tshuva, makes it clear that one of the critical components to have the Tshuva process done properly is for a person to say the words Avo, Anachnu ve'Avoseinu Chatanu. Says the Rambam, we have to say what we now became familiar with. Aval anachnu v'avoseinu chatanu means, but we and our forefathers all did things wrong. And that the Rambam includes in the whole discussion about what tshuva is really going to be about. That's something that has to be a critical component of tshuva. Now you ask yourself, why is it so important that we say that line? Aval anachnu v'avoseinu chatanu? Why is that so critical to the process of tshuva? I once heard a phenomenal insight. And that is, I don't know if you all agree, but I live life, I believe, most people are well-intentioned. You know, I was just talking to a couple the other day. It was last week. I was talking to a couple who's struggling with infertility. And it's an extremely painful process that they're going through. It's been many years. And you hear the success stories of the people who it actually works for. Unfortunately, there are many who have not yet had success, and we daven for them, and we do whatever we can to help them. And one of these people was talking to me, and he said that he's often asked the question by others who are struggling with the same challenge. You know, doesn't it hurt you when people say things that are so insensitive? Doesn't it bother you when people say things that are so hurtful? And he said that he encourages couples to think about the following. Most people who say something to you are well-intentioned. They're trying to be nice. They don't know how to. They just don't know the right words to say. Maybe they're not sensitive enough to understand how to present themselves or how to talk about it. But understand that most people do mean well. Most people are well-intentioned. And when you think about it from that perspective, maybe it's not as hurtful when somebody says something that's off. They're not trying to hurt you. When you think about it from that point of view, it becomes a very different conversation. I was just talking to someone this morning at a shiva, and the other was complaining to me that over the course of the week, people were coming in and they just asked such silly questions and they're focusing on the stupidest things. And that's not what we're here for. He was so upset, and I said to him, you know, I just heard from this guy the other week. You have to understand, most people who come are well-intentioned. They don't mean to hurt you. They're not trying to say something that's insensitive. Maybe they just don't yet know how to be sensitive. So here, the insight is as follows. Most people, I believe, no right from wrong. They know what to do. They know what not to do. Most people know how to choose right most of the time. So what happens? Where do we go wrong? Where do we go wrong? How is it that so many people do things wrong and get caught up in sin and get further and further into a problem? How can that be? And the answer is that we sometimes justify or rationalize a behavior. We know right from wrong, but yes, in this situation, in this circumstance, where I'm up to in life, what I'm being presented with has nothing to do with what, in the abstract, I would say is totally inappropriate or wrong. Of course, it doesn't apply to me. It's not because I don't know right from wrong anymore, it's because I justify my behavior. I come up with all kinds of excuses to explain how it is that I can do this or why it is that I should be doing that. That is living a life of avo, avo, avo. Yes, yes, this is right, this is wrong, but it's a whole life of buts. It's everything that I know to be right or wrong, but when it comes to me, but this, but that, but these circumstances, this doesn't apply, that doesn't apply, says the Rambam, avo, anachnu, avoseinu, chatanu. The Rambam says to recognize what the root of so many of our problems is, so many of the problems that don't only inflict us, but inflicted our parents as well, is the fact that we live an entire life of avol, of saying yes, but this, yes, but that, yes, but something else, a rationalization, a justification for everything we do. And that is so much at the root of the problem that we have, of the poor decisions that we make. You know, it applies to so many different areas of life. Just think for a moment about how many of us don't agree that having strong relationships with our parents, with our children, with our spouses, with our siblings, is something that's valuable. It's something that's important to us. So you ask somebody, so why don't you make time for it? Well, you know, but this, but of course, I have communal responsibilities, I have a job, I have professional obligations, I have societal expectations, all kinds of things. It doesn't allow me to spend time with the people who are most important to me. It's not that the person doesn't believe that it's important to have strong relationships with their family. They do believe that. But we have a million and one excuses, a million and one reasons. Some of them are legitimate, some of them are not. But either way, we come up with all the avals in the world to explain our behavior, to justify why it is that we do what we do. I once heard a phenomenal quote, really, an unbelievable quote, from the third Prime Minister of Israel, Levi Eshkol. So he commented on a pasuk in Sefer Eicha. The Navi in Sefer Eicha writes, when he's describing the Chumra Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, he says, Darkei Tzion Avelos, which means, the streets of Yerushalayim were in mourning. It was desolate. It was empty. Everything was destroyed. Everything was in ruins. It was Charev. So he suggested, perhaps it means something additional to that as well. You know why the streets of Yerushalayim are empty? The Darkei Tzion are so desolate, you know why? Because everyone in the diaspora is living a life of avol this and avol that. If any of us would be asked, do you support the state of Israel? Of course I support the state of Israel. Do you love the Jewish people? Yes, of course I love the Jewish people. Do you believe that what we're living through right now is aschalta de geula? Maybe yes, maybe no. I believe that. Yes, okay. So you believe that. Do you believe that the future of the most important history of the Jewish people is going to be in the state of Israel? Yes. Do you believe that we should support all of the goings-on in Eretz Yisrael, we should buy Israeli bonds, we should support all that's stuck in Israel? Yes, of course! This is what I stand for, this is who I am, it's part of my identity. So why don't you live there? Oh, it's got very quiet in here. So you believe all of the things that we just mentioned. So why don't you live there? Well, you know, my family lives here. I'm in school here. I have to find the shidduch here. I have to get a parnasa here. I have to raise my children here. I don't like this. I don't like that. I'm not going to be able to get Heinz ketchup there. What am I going to do? All the very important excuses that we come up with. Now again, some of them very legitimate. The halacha does recognize being in Israel is not the be-all and end-all. Actually, in this week's parsha, please don't be offended that I'm saying this. Somebody who's a staunch Zionist is not going to like this part. But it's from the Chasam Sofer, so don't kill me. Go kill him. He's dead a long time ago. So the Chasam Sofer writes as follows. We know that on Pesach we say, Behotseisi v'itzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti. It's from Parshas Va'era. We have different Lashonos of Geula. You heard this Friday night in Shul. Different Lashonos of Geula. I saw you sleeping. I'm kidding. So different Lashonos of Geula.
And next time anyone's in Woodmere for Shabbos, you know, let me know. I'm happy to have you. So, Dalad Lashonis of Geula, and that's why we have four cups of wine. That's what the Rishonim say. It's Keneged, the four different terminologies that refer to our redemption from Mitzrayim. Now, we all know that there's a fifth. What's the fifth? What's the fifth? The Hevesi. What's the Hevesi? What does it mean? The Pasuk says, not only will I take you out of Mitzrayim, not only will I lift you from the bondage in Mitzrayim, but the Hevesi Eschem El Aretz, I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael. So, why do we not have a fifth cup of wine on Leil HaSeder, on Pesach night? Why do we only have four cups? There should be five cups. There's five components to the story of redemption. There's different phases, different stages of redemption, but the ultimate, the goal, the aspiration is, we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, the Hevesi Eschem El Aretz. Ask the Yerushalmi, why do we not have five cups of wine? So one opinion is, yeah, you should have five cups of wine. That's not what we do. So why do we not do that? Why do we not do that? Explains the Chasam Sofer. There's a concern. If we're going to put too much focus on the Hevesi Eschem El Haaretz, which is the ultimate aspiration of every Jew for the last few thousand years, going back to the land of Israel, building a life in the land of Israel, that's what we all believe in. It's what your family did, right? It's what should be. But yet, if we would put too much focus on that, it would be at the expense of anything we're supposed to accomplish so long as we're in Gups. People would say, you know what? This is a meaningless experience. There's no reason to be here. We have nothing to accomplish. And people would not realize that there's a value to the experience they're supposed to be going through now. The Chasam Sofer writes, being in Israel is not the be-all and end-all. There are other factors and other considerations. Of course, the aspiration of every Jew is that ultimately we'll come back as a nation. Uvalet Zion Goel, we'll come back to Eretz Yisrael. It's what it's all about. But don't forget that along the way, there's what to do. Votseisi v'hitzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti, you got to build the Jewish people. You have what to accomplish. You have what to do here. Don't give up on all of that. Don't put your eyes only on the goal, which is the Hevesi Eschem El Haaretz, and of course that's important, but we don't want that to overshadow everything else. And here, perhaps he said, as much as we believe that we support Eretz Yisrael and we want the best for the future of Eretz Yisrael, and we know it's where all of us belong, so why are we not there? So homiletically he said, Levi Eshkol, Darchei Tzion Avelos. The reason why we're not there is because we're all full of avol this, avol that. All the excuses in the world, all the rationalization to explain why it's just not a good time for my family, and it's not a good thing for me right now, and it's not going to work. Now again, some of those rationalizations are very legitimate and very justified, but others perhaps are not. We can spend an entire life making excuses, rationalizing behavior. As I mentioned, some of them extremely legitimate. Giving excuses is part of a basic tendency that we all have. It's an obvious defense mechanism that we all use. Instead of admitting to failure, admitting to a poor decision that we may have made, we just say, we have this excuse or that excuse. Think about when the first human beings lost their schus, lost their right to be in Gan Eden, to be in paradise. When did they lose it? Not when they did something wrong. When did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Adam HaRishon, get out of Gan Eden? When did that happen? After he was trying to make justifications for what he did wrong. Not after he did something wrong. Everybody does things wrong. It was after Adam HaRishon couldn't take responsibility. After he said, no, it was this, Haisha, no, it was that, other things. All the excuses in the world, no, take responsibility and realize you've done something. You've done something. Own it. It's your life. That was the problem. That is what made him lose his opportunity to live and experience life in Gan Eden, in the greatest place in the world. But he hid from his responsibility. And what brings us back to a sense of Gan Eden, back to a sense of living life to its fullest, is when a person has that ability to actually have the courage to say that I take responsibility for my own life, to have that determination. And this is the story of human beings as long as we've known them, that they're always blaming other people. They're always blaming victim. Can't take responsibility. Think about in World War II, which was the perpetrators of the greatest calamity and crime against humanity in all of history. Not Jewish history, all of history. And yet, many of the soldiers were asked how they can do such a thing. And what did they say?
were just obeying orders. Took no responsibility for what they had done. And this is something, when you think about the story of Yosef HaTzadik and his brothers, we just read about it a few weeks ago. Yosef says he's going to take one brother hostage, he's going to leave him behind in Mitzrayim. The brothers start fighting, everyone starts arguing. And what are the words they say? Look carefully in the pasuk. Avo ashemim anachnu. Which means, but we are guilty. Perhaps some suggest what it means is, ashemim anachnu, you know where we went wrong? It's because of avo this and avo that. Had we thought about it in truth? Of course we couldn't kill our brother. How could we do such a thing? How did we get ourselves to a point where we did it? The answer is because we all gave excuses. We're not really killing him, we're just selling him to another nation. We're just putting him in a pit. Okay, if something happens, then it's not my fault. It's not really me. Take a step back. Zoom out the lens and ask yourself, is this normal? How can you do such a thing? It's your brother. You're going to kill your own father at home. How can you be involved in such an activity? The answer is, Aval, Hashem Amanachna. The reason why we're guilty is because we lived an entire experience of Aval this and Aval that and giving all the excuses and justifications, rationalizing our behavior, and that's how we got to this point. It's the first thing they say after they realize that they're in big trouble, after they realize there's a big issue in front of them. People can live all of life giving excuses. Sometimes, as we said, very valid excuses. Think about the contrast. When Yosef actually reveals himself to his brothers, so the Torah tells us, "Velo yachlu echa lanos osoki nivalu mipanav." Yosef's brothers were not able to look him in the face because they were so overwhelmed, they couldn't believe it. Now, of course, it was an overwhelming time. Rashi quotes the Gemara Maseches Chagiga, "Oilanu miyom adin, oilanu miyom atochacha." How overwhelmed they all were, and what's going to be when we're all going to stand in front of judgment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How are we going to handle that? If they were so ashamed of themselves, what's going to be when we're going to stand in front of Melech Malchei Hamelachim, who sees straight through us? It's not that we can make up some kind of story, but they were very overwhelmed from seeing and being reintroduced to their brother Yosef. The Baal HaTur writes there, what was so overwhelming to them, it wasn't just the fact that they couldn't believe that they had done all of this and so many terrible mistakes along the way. No, says the Baal HaTur, I'm going to read his words. Shalo hela al daitem sheyagia Yosef lemaila kazu. In their wildest dreams, nobody thought Yosef would ever get to this point. We tried to kill this kid. We tried to get rid of him. Yosef HaTzadik was abused by his brothers. Yosef was neglected by his family. Yosef was a person who had so many things going against him. He was estranged from all the rest of them. Yosef was probably very depressed. He assimilated into the Egyptian culture, and his brothers turn around and they say, how could it be? Somebody who has so many roadblocks, so many impediments along the way, and yet overcomes all of them, and turns out to be Yosef, the leader of Mitzrayim, the leader of our family, he's going to be the one to save us? They couldn't believe it. That was overwhelming to them. Yosef was the contrast to them. They lived a life of excuses. Yosef, who had every right to have excuses in his life, said, I'm not going to allow those to impede my ability to grow. It's my life. Again, we all have excuses. Many of them are very legitimate. We have challenges. People grow up sometimes in a hostile environment. It's in their way. It's a roadblock. It's an impediment. It's hard. People sometimes have disabilities in so many different ways. It's hard, it's difficult. There are things that stand in our way, but at the end of the day to realize, of course, it's legitimate to look at all of those, but to realize the one who needs to take responsibility for their life in the end is not going to be anyone else other than me. It's only going to be me. And if I want to grow, if I want to be productive, if I want to be successful, you have to define success carefully. But if I want to be successful, it's only going to happen if I have the ability to look past all of these impediments, to figure out how to navigate my way through them, and not live a life hiding behind all of them. And again, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. It's not that we don't have the ability to focus on them. It's healthy to focus on them. Just 2 weeks ago, I mentioned I was with this group of Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, and we visited Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau. Did I say this? One of the things Rabbi Lau said to us, which I think any psychologist today would say it's insane. But he said it's what kept him on track to do what he needed to do in life to be successful. He survived the Holocaust. One of the people in our group asked him, So you were Nevach, a Yassam, 8 years old. You lost your parents. You came to Eretz Yisrael. You didn't really have family. You had some great uncle somewhere. And you and your brother survived. How did you become the Rabbi Rashi Yisrael? How did you become the chief rabbi of Israel? Starting from those humble beginnings. Great question. I'm telling you, he looked at us like we were crazy. Like we fell from a different planet. He didn't even understand the question. We didn't understand what his response was. But he basically said, I was 8 years old. I survived the Holocaust. My brother was 12 years older than me. We got to Eretz Yisrael. My brother turns to me one day and he says, listen, the name Lau, which is our last name, is Begimatria 37. Not so complicated. Lamed, Aleph, Vav, you can do this. 37. We have a history of 37 generations of Rabbanim in our family. Our father was the 37th. I'm already over 20 years old. I lost that in all my high school years. I was in the camps. I'll never grow. You're only 8 years old. You have a whole life in front of you. Look, the choice is yours. If you want the chain of rabbinic leaders in our family to end, it ends with you. If you want it to continue, then you need to work to that end. And you'll continue the legendary legacy of our family. He said, any therapist today would tell you, how can you put such pressure on a kid? What can you do? It's crazy. And he said, maybe it is crazy. But we weren't thinking about crazy then. We had seen plenty of crazy. But he said, I lived my whole life knowing exactly what my goal needed to be. Knowing that I held this responsibility. I could have lived with every excuse in the world. I went through the camps, I went through the Holocaust, I was 8 years old, and I'm a Nevach HaYassam, and here I am in Israel, relocated, I don't even know what I'm doing here. But I knew, he said. I knew all of those are excuses, legitimate excuses, but they won't get me anywhere. It won't get me anywhere. It's hiding behind my own pity, and it's not taking responsibility for my own life to do what I know I need to do to be successful. I'm so inspired by it. It's an amazing sentiment that he shared with us. And how proud he was to say that not only did he overcome the obstacles, the tremendous, insurmountable obstacles that he had gone through, the trauma that he had been through in his life, not only did he overcome it to be the 38th in the chain, but his son is now the 39th in the chain, who's the chief rabbi of Israel. And he's living this reality of enjoying a person who was able to see through all of the avols, all of the very legitimate avols in life. I mention this because the Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah, let's look on the sheet. V'chali shmi Yisrael chayiv b'Talmud Torah, the Rambam says, everyone is chayiv to learn Torah. Bein ani u'bein ashir, whether somebody is poor, whether somebody is living an affluent, wealthy lifestyle, or they're in totally destitute circumstances, poverty-stricken. Bein shalei begufa, bein bal yisurim, says the Rambam, whether you have a disability, whether you have a physical ailment, whether you're a bal yisurim, whether you have things that are difficult and painful in your life, bein bachur, bein shaya zakin, gadol v'tashish kocho, whether you're young and energetic, or perhaps you're slow and sluggish, afilu hayana hamisparnis min atzadaka v'chazer al apsefin, says the Rambam, even if you're the kind of person who has to go around the town peddling and soliciting people to help you out. Chayiv l'kvo l'zman l'imul Torah. You have to make time to learn Torah. You have to make time to learn Torah. How do we know this? The Gemara says we learn it from the Seches Yuma, Daf Lamed Hei, Tana Rabbanan, Ani v'Asher v'Rasha v'Ein L'Din. Different people stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, stand in front of God for judgment. La'ani over below, the poor person stands there and he says, Bipinevalo Asakta Torah, God asks him, well, how come you didn't learn Torah? And he says, what do you mean? Ani Hayisi Vitar Bimzanosa, you know how poor I was? You know how much time I had to spend trying to make a parnasa, trying to support my family, trying to put food on the table? What did you expect of me? The answer that we say to him is, Kluma Ani Hayisa Yosar Mehila. Do you think you were in a worse situation than Hillel? Impossible. Hillel had the worst of the worst. Hillel was in the most difficult, dire circumstances, and yet Hillel overcame, and Hillel ultimately became the leader of the Jewish people. Hillel mastered so much Torah, more than others. Hillel was the one who was Machzir HaTorah LiYoshna. He brought the Torah back to the community that had forgotten it. And the Gemara says we use Hillel as a paradigm of a person who takes personal responsibility. We are all Bali Bechira. We all have the ability to make choices, to choose how to live life. And here the Gemara tells us Hillel chose to look past all of his impediments, to work through them, and to say, I need to accomplish. I need to be something. I need to be successful. And with all the things in the way of doing that, he understood, I need to figure out how to overcome them, to be the person who I need to be. That's the second lesson we learned from Hillel. Especially when you're here, there are so many different things that are going to stand in your way of spiritual growth. And as you continue to go through life, and you're going to have so many different people in your life who might be living with different values, who might not be in the same spiritual place where you want to be, a person needs to be strong and understand all of these are impediments, all of these are obstacles, but I need to take responsibility for the person I want to be. Don't fool yourself and think, it's never going to be me. It could so easily be you. It could so easily be you in both directions. You can be the Hillel, and you can unfortunately be the one who is unable to overcome and who does not take personal responsibility for the life that they are so blessed to live. But this is the second thing we learned from Hillel. And finally, the Gemara tells us that Hillel had many, many disputes with Shammai. I think the Gemara says there were over 300 machloksim, 300 disputes that they shared with each other. So the Gemara Masechet Erev in Daf Yud Gimel says that there was one particular dispute that they had for over 3 years. They were going back and forth about this one particular issue. At some point, the Gemara says, Yatzis Abasko, a heavenly voice came out and said, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. Hillel's position is legitimate. Shammai's position is legitimate. Both of them mean well. Both of them are saying something that makes a lot of sense. However, who is the bottom line that we are going to accept? Whose opinion is the one that we're going to adopt? Hillel's. Ask the Gemara. If you just told me that both opinions are legitimate and both are correct, then why do we accept Hillel? What is more correct about his? What is more special about his? And the Gemara answers what's special about him is, Shenavin va'aluvin hayu v'shonim divrein v'divrei be'shamay. Because Hillel, on a scale between Hillel and Shammai, Hillel was more considerate. Hillel was more understanding. Hillel was gentler and more respectful. And that's why his opinion is the one that is accepted. Hillel, if you read through the Gemara stories about Hillel, it's clear that one of his hallmark characteristics was his sense of humility, his ability to give respect to other people. And I feel we live in such a cutthroat society. We live in a society where people take so much pleasure when they're able to call out others for things they've done wrong. And I'm not saying we shouldn't. There are times when it's appropriate, but there are ways to do so. And you see online how people are so quick to judge others and have no respect for different kinds of people who have different ideologies than they do. We make no space for people who don't seem to be on the same kind of belief system as we might be. And it's an opportunity for us to think as we develop ourselves and as we try to figure out who we want to become, to just realize that Hillel, who fought hard for his opinions, Hillel, who believed with all his conviction that this was right and the other opinion was wrong, understood that we still make space for their other opinion that is wrong. And we're still respectful. And when we talk about an issue, we have no problem being civil and having that conversation. And having a discourse and a dialogue is something that's valuable. It's something that we do respect. It's something that we do think is important in our community, as much as we feel very much that our position is so important for the future of the community, for what the Jewish people are going to be, for what we stand for what our values are. There's a way to do it. There's a mahalach. There is a tone. There is a respectful way to make space for other people. So Hillel was considered to be extremely unique in this regard, a tremendous sense of humility. What then becomes somewhat troubling is a statement that is attributed to Hillel in Maseches Sukkah, and this is the last entry on the sheet. The Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah
it describes the annual celebration on Chol HaMoed Sukkos of the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And the Gemara says this was an elaborate celebration. And it was beyond any other gathering that they had throughout the year. And of course, there were many different experiences throughout the year where people came together, celebrated different things. But yet, when it came to the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the Gemara says, Misha lo ra'a simcha zu, lo ra'a simcha miyama. If you didn't experience the overwhelming joy at the time of the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, you really have not seen anything. You don't understand what it means to have a Jewish party. That's what the Gemara says. On that occasion, the Gemara says, of course, the leaders of the Jewish community came, and they joined the celebration. And the Gemara says, Hillel stood up and he gave a speech. Greatest rabbi of all time gives the shortest speech. One line. What does he say? The following very cryptic statement. Im ani kan, hakol kan. Can I have everyone's attention? It's so wonderful to be here together to celebrate in the Beis HaMikdash, it's Sukkos, Zman Simcha, Seinu, amazing! Let me just share with you some very important words. And those words are, Im ani kan, hakol kan. If I am here, this is wonderful. Vim ein ani kan, if I'm not here, mikan. Then of what value is this party? I thank you all for coming. And he sits down. Does that rub anybody the wrong way? It should. What does this mean? Now Rashi is troubled by it. Rashi says, what do you mean? Hillel gets up and he says, you know, we've all come together to celebrate me, Hillel. And if I wouldn't have shown up, you could have all gone home. There's no reason to be here. That doesn't make sense. It can't be. Rashi says, he proves from different psukim that really what Hillel was talking about was a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ani is a reference to the Ribono Shel Olam. And he says, if God is present in the room, then we have reason to celebrate. But if we don't believe in God and we're not going to be Shomrei Torah Mitzvos and we're not going to follow His expectations of us, then what's the reason to say we can all have a party somewhere else? Why are we here? That's what Rashi explains. But if you read the words, it seems not to be what Hillel is saying. And that's why Tosfos and other Rishonim say Rashi is not correct. Hillel was actually talking about himself. So how can that be? Hillel, who we just finished saying, was such a humble person, made space for other people, always quoted the dissenting opinion before his own, always understood that we have to be respectful to others. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos that there was a potential convert who came to Hillel and he wanted to convert and he was asking all kinds of annoying, ridiculous questions. And the Gemara says that Shammai kicked him out of the room and Shammai said, you know, go fly a kite, go somewhere else, I don't want to talk to you. And Hillel treated him with tremendous patience and Hillel answered all his questions and Hillel dealt with him and Hillel ultimately converted him. Wonderful story, beautiful. One after the other, the Gemara tells us these amazing stories. This person, this Hillel, this leader, who was so humble, who was so understanding, who was so respectful, stands up and says, if I'm here, we have a great reason to celebrate. If I wouldn't have shown up, then the main attraction is out here, then everyone should go home. How do you understand it? How do you understand it? So Rav Soloveitchik writes in one of his svarim to explain what this is all about, and it's such a fundamental idea. He writes the following. It's in the Sefer Al HaTshuva. Hillel, it's true, was the Adam Mikal Adam. Hillel, in so many different ways, was parallel to Moshe Rabbeinu. Hillel was a legendary leader. Hillel was somebody who had the ultimate sense of modesty and humility. It's true. However, this person, Hillel, who exemplified these unbelievable characteristics, Dafka hu shemad gisha sa'ani. Hillel, who's so humble, is the one who stands up and says, we also need to realize our self-value, our self-worth. Hillel is the one who taught us, Im ani kan hakol kan ki b'li hakara sa'ani ein adam yachol litzar. If I don't make time to recognize and appreciate and acknowledge who I am and what I can be, I will never be able to accomplish and achieve any success in life. It is Dafka Hillel. It's Hillel whose entire life exemplified this overwhelming sense of modesty and humility. Hillel stood up and said, even if you have the personality like me, you need to recognize and understand you have what to accomplish. God believes in you. If He put you here, it means He thinks there's something you can do. And if you're here, you have to do something with that ability.
it's Hillel who taught us that lesson. And it's Bedavka Hillel who taught us that lesson. It's exactly what some explain when Moshe Rabbeinu is described in Chumash, Baha'ish Moshe Adam Mikal Adam Asher Panei HaAdama. Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble of all human beings. Moshe Rabbeinu accomplished so much, but yet, Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble of them all. And yet, the way we describe this in the Pasuk, the way we're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu is, V'ha'ish Moshe Adam Mikal Adam Asher Panei HaAdama. We first refer to him as an Ish. Moshe Rabbeinu stood up and he said, I know that there's work for me to do. I know that I'm a Gavra. I know that I'm an Ish. I know there's something for me to accomplish. With all of that, he was the Adam Mikal Adam. It's not a contradiction. Erev Soloveitchik said, for a person to be able to have success in life, we need to realize, on the one hand, I need to stand up and be an Ish and be a person and realize my self-value and realize that there's what for me to contribute to society and the world. And outside of that, to have this perspective of Hillel and understanding that I need to be respectful of other people's opinions and positions as well, who may not be feeling the same way I feel, who may not be living the same way I live. This is what Hillel teaches, im ein anili mili. It's exactly what the Mishnah means. If I'm not going to take responsibility for my own life, who will? I can live a whole life of avol this, avol that, excuses. But at the end of the day, you won't be successful. If you want to be successful, you have to realize, im ein anili mili. No one else is going to take responsibility for your life. It has to be you. If life is only about being self-centered and focusing on my own goals and my own successes and my own aspirations and ambitions, then ma'ani, is that life? It's this balance, it's this understanding that both of those are so critical to all of our success. We know that the Navi, when he describes the Mabel, the generation of destruction, the Navi refers to the Mabel as Mei Noach. And this is something that troubles so many Mefarshim. What do you mean? Noach is the one who saved the world. Why do you refer to the destruction as Mei Noach? What does that have to do with Noach? Noach is the one who tried his hardest, valiantly. 100 years he's building the Teva. How can you blame it on him? So some say the reason why is because Noach lo hispala. How did Noach not offer a tefillah? You know, you hear that somebody's sick, somebody's life is in danger. The first thing you do is you pray. You do whatever you can. So how did Noach not do that? Noach understood the power of tefillah, so why did he not do that? The Kedushas Levi, the Bardichever, writes that although Noach, the Torah says, was an ish tzaddik, Noach was a righteous person, he was a great human being, but yet, we're told, hayakatan be'inav miod. Noach didn't believe in his own power and his own value. Noach didn't understand, he underestimated how potent his tefillah could be. God believes in you, Noach. You're the only one who's going to survive this terrible calamity. There's something you can do. Noach didn't realize. In his humility, he didn't realize, if God put me here, means there's something I can do. What can I do? Don't just build a table. There's more that you can do. You can petition God and He'll listen to you. But Noach was katan be'enei atzmo. Noach didn't realize the own self-worth and self-value that he had. That's what he was lacking. And perhaps that's the reason why this is referred to as Mei Noach. So as we embark on this wonderful journey of a new semester, and we have the opportunity not only to excel in so many areas of study that are going to bring us closer to our ambitions and closer to our aspirations and our dreams, we also have an opportunity to be spiritually ambitious, to think about those who at different stages of their lives continue to challenge themselves, even though they accomplished a whole lot before. They understood that there's more that they can do. There are new challenges that they can take upon themselves, new goals they can set. And although many of us have all kinds of obstacles and hurdles along the way, we also all have the ability to live like Hillel and say, all of that is avol this, avol that, avol the other thing. But I can somehow get past it and take responsibility for my own life. And in doing so, not only to be self-centered, not only to be focused on my own goals, my own aspirations, but to think about Hillel and how he made space for so many others around him who he disagreed with, who he did not appreciate their point of view or their perspective, but he understood there's value in it. Let's have a conversation, let's have a dialogue, let's be respectful. But doing that And being an Anav, all in the context of also understanding, if God put me here, it means that God has something for me to accomplish. It means He believes in me, and if He believes in me, then it's my job to believe in myself as well. So I look forward to